And it's made of a shiny white ceramic material, and some of the pieces are broken. There are shepherds that are taller than the stable, and shepherds that fit the scene perfectly. Everything is a little bit mismatched and off, but like most nativities, it has a Mary and a Joseph and Jesus, shepherds, an angel, animals, and some wise men. Well, two wise men, to be exact. Most nativities have three because we assume that there were three of them since there were three gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. But actually, as you may have noticed, or maybe not, nowhere in the scripture passage we just read does it say how many wise men there were. So I guess I can be okay with having a nativity that only has two. As it turns out, there's a lot of assumptions that we make about the wise men, or who we sometimes call magi, that are simply unfounded. We call them kings when they were really just astrologers or perhaps royal advisors coming to see Jesus from modern-day Iran, Iraq, or Saudi Arabia. We put them in our nativity scenes alongside shepherds, when nowhere in the text implies that the shepherds and wise men were present to see Jesus at the same time. In fact, the wise men only appear in Matthew's version of the story that we just read, and the shepherds only appear in Luke. The wise men don't even come to a manger scene at all. They find Jesus in a house in Bethlehem. Speaking of things we get wrong with our nativity scene, we also tend to have humongous stars on top of them, as if everyone could see the star and find their way to Jesus, when Luke doesn't even really mention a star, and the star that the wise men follow in Matthew didn't seem to be noticed by anybody else. If it was so big and obvious, King Herod wouldn't have had to ask the wise men to come back and tell him where to go to find baby Jesus. It seems that the wise men were the only ones who noticed this star in the midst of so many others in the sky and recognized its significance. And if, as the wise men believed, the star rose at the time of Jesus' birth, Jesus could have been alive for quite a while, completely unnoticed and insignificant to Herod and most of Judea, with this subtle star hovering over him. The wise men had to notice the star, interpret its rising, make plans to travel, and then finally go west to find Jesus. Jesus may have even been as old as 2 years old, just a little bit older than my daughter Ella, who was up here twirling the ribbons, or a little bit younger, sorry, than my daughter Ella, who was up here twirling the ribbons, when the wise men arrive in Matthew's story. Maybe Jesus and the wise men even had a little chat during their visit. And maybe Mary worried about all the attention going to Jesus' head. Maybe, like my daughter on Christmas morning, Jesus said, "Oh, thank you so very much," when he opened the wise men's gifts. So why do we never think about any of this? Why do we miss so much when it comes to this story that we hear every Christmas? Well, perhaps we get so wrapped up in the picturesque version of Christmas we've been fed, with cute, adoring animals and worshiping shepherds and regally dressed magi, sparkling stars and majestic angels all in one place, that we easily overlook the details that are in the text right in front of us. Kind of like the people of Bethlehem and Jerusalem overlook the birth of Jesus. And isn't that the way it goes sometimes? Significant kingdom-building things are happening right under our noses, and we're too distracted by some idealized idea of what change or God's presence should look like that we miss it completely. The gifts of the wise men are more than just gold, frankincense, and myrrh. They bring gifts of noticing what others miss, perspective only outsiders can bring, and a reminder that the kingdom of Jesus is for everyone, not just Jewish people. So why is it that the wise men notice what others overlook? God is revealed to them in the everyday work of studying their star charts, In the ordinary, everyday tasks of their lives, they find a sign that God is there, that salvation is coming, that something amazing is going to happen. Why is it that they are the ones to make this observation? It isn't priests or religious leaders in Jerusalem who have all of these prophecies who receive this epiphany through their prayers. It isn't people from Jesus' own culture and community. It's strangers studying the stars who see signs of God at work. Maybe the folks from Jesus' hometown had opportunities to notice God moving but lacked the focus to notice. Maybe we struggle with the same thing. Perhaps the wise men had an advantage in that their everyday work required them to pay attention to the subtle rhythms and patterns of the universe in a way that most of us don't. Maybe if we spent more time paying attention to those rhythms and movements in creation, we might discover God moving in new ways as well. So I have to confess that as much as I have really enjoyed the warm weather this week, I've been a little cranky about it. We have had a very unseasonably warm fall and a week of 50 to 60 degree weather to kick off January, and it makes my gardener's soul uneasy. Now, I'm no astrologer like the wise men. I know nothing about reading star patterns or signs, but I do know the signs of the seasons as a gardener, and I know that warm weather in January is not a good thing for plants. It can cause spring flowering trees and bushes to bud too soon, thinking that it's spring and it's time to wake up. And then when the cold weather returns, as it will, the buds will die and we have no flowers in the spring. This doesn't just mean a bleaker spring landscape with less flowering trees, but it means that fruit trees might not bear fruit and it will negatively impact our local orchards. Is this warm weather a sign of God at work? I don't think so. But it reminds me of the importance of the seasons and the rhythms of creation that are created for rest before growth, the warm embrace of the sun before blossoming, the empowerment of the summer sun before the bounty of autumn harvest. And I think God works in seasons in our lives too, seasons of resting, of growing, empowering, and fruitfulness. And sometimes we get so distracted by the day-to-day, we don't take time to stop and notice what season we're actually in, or recognize that a winter season of rest is perhaps just as important and productive as a summer season of fruitfulness. Perhaps if we stopped to note what season we're in, we might catch a glimpse of how God is at work among us in a new way. I think what the wise men saw in the stars was a sign of a season of change. Something was coming on the horizon, something new, a new king, a new way of being a kingdom, and they wanted to go and see it for themselves. The irony is that Jesus' own people had been waiting for this change for a long time, longing for a Messiah, but they were so close to it that they didn't recognize the significance of the birth of this tiny infant born to poor parents in a nothing town. Maybe it was their own expectations and biases about what a Messiah would look like that prevented them from noticing what was going on, and that season of change that they longed for was finally upon them. They had been dreaming about the Messiah so long, and maybe they'd conjured up these idealistic images of the way this hero would ride in and save them all. But the wise men didn't have these same projections or expectations. They just saw a sign in the stars that a significant person had been born and followed the path before them to whoever it led to. Rich or poor, weak or strong, popular or outcast, it didn't matter. And it doesn't say that they were shocked or surprised to find Jesus in a humble house with poor parents. It just says they were delighted and filled with joy when they found him. They knew that this child was indeed the Messiah. And perhaps something about being outsiders actually helped them see the truth of who Jesus was more clearly than those who were close at hand. If you've ever spent any significant amount of time in a foreign country or city and then come back to your hometown, you might get a little glimpse into what it's like to bring an outsider's perspective home. One of my biggest observations about myself when I spent 2 years in Albania in my 20s was that I was truly an uptight East Coast girl. In Albania, it is customary to drop whatever you are doing at any time in order to socialize with friends, neighbors, or acquaintances. And if someone knocks on your door while you are cleaning or working on a project, you invite them in for an hour or two of conversation over coffee. You run into someone on your way to the grocery store, the groceries can wait. You go to coffee, and you spend 2 hours chatting. You delay running all of your errands and stop to be with people. Now, as an East Coast American who had a lot of lesson plans to write and needed alone time to function, this drove me crazy. I realized that I saw my time as a possession that belonged to me, and I felt like other people were trying to steal it. And yet, when I returned to the US, I saw things a little bit differently. Even though I struggled to culturally adjust to a place in Albania where relationships were valued more than independence or personal productivity, when I returned to the States, I realized that I had changed, and I was shocked and disappointed to discover that it took so much effort to schedule times to get together with my friends. I hadn't seen them in so long, and yet I would have to schedule things 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month out on my calendar just to see them for a couple hours. I realized that perhaps, truly, maybe we are a little too possessive of our time sometimes and could benefit from prioritizing social interactions and cutting back on our busyness so we're not quite so isolated from the people that we love. I would never have noticed this in the same way if I had not lived somewhere else for so long. And there are still many things about my own culture and community that I totally miss and am completely blind to. And this is why when we have new people among us, whether they're new to this country, our town, or even our church community, they offer us gifts of seeing things, both good and bad, that we overlook. Just as the wise men saw the significance of the baby Jesus, who was insignificant to everyone else in his community. The trick is we have to have enough humility and curiosity to listen and learn when those strangers among us have wisdom to share. But if we do, we'll gain insight not just about ourselves, but about how God is at work among us and around us. And that brings us to the last gift of the wise men, a reminder that Jesus is the founder of a kingdom that isn't exclusive to one people, time, or place, but one that includes strangers, foreigners, outsiders, and those that others might judge as unworthy. The very first to have an epiphany about Jesus' true identity, other than his mother, are these magi, these wise men, foreigners from a far-off land. Those you'd assume would be the last to hear about Jesus' birth because they're so far away, are actually the first people to come and worship him and see him for who he truly is. This is a reminder to me that we in the Christian religious community don't get to claim a full knowledge of who Jesus is. We have things to learn about Jesus from those outside our community who may see Jesus differently or maybe even more clearly than we do sometimes. This could be people of other religions or cultures, people who claim no religious affiliation at all. Sometimes the greatest epiphanies come from the most unexpected places. We just have to take time to listen and learn. My junior year of college, I spent a semester abroad in Mexico and Guatemala. And during Holy Week, we visited a small Mexican Mennonite church to help out with some things on their property and get to know the church community. And on Monday, Thursday, we had a meal together and participated in the very Mennonite ritual of washing feet. Now, I have done foot washing many times, as perhaps some of you have as well. I grew up doing this in my congregation. We would separate the men and the women into two different Sunday school classrooms to wash feet, and people would buddy up with a friend or a family member and wash each other's feet and then go back to the room with everybody else. I have very vivid memories of washing feet with pantyhose on them and prepping my own feet ahead of time so that they weren't too nasty to be in the water with everyone else's. And even after my many experiences of foot washing, I was not prepared for what would take place in the Mexican church I was in that Holy Week. We did not split into gendered groups. We stayed in the same room together where we had eaten our meal, and people started finding others with whom they could partner to wash feet. Before long, I had found a partner, and we had washed each other's feet, and I sat down and I thought, okay, I did it. I did what I'm supposed to do. I'm good. I'm done. I was totally wrong. Members from the church, I noticed, were working their way around the room, washing the feet of as many people as they could. Whoa. I was shocked. Who would want to wash more than one pair of feet? And these people weren't even expecting their feet to be washed in return. But I realized that to them, this was not just an empty ritual that we did in a basement once a year. It was something powerful and holy. They wanted every person to know that they were deeply cared for, and they wanted to serve the way that Jesus did. After all, Jesus did wash a lot of feet over and over again, and no one actually washed his. I learned more about who Jesus is from that little church in Mexico than I ever did from the countless foot washing rituals I performed in my youth. Jesus the servant king became real to me in a new way because I was able to learn from another place and another culture. So, this epiphany, I am reminded that God is revealed anew among us in strangers and in ordinary, unexpected places, in hidden things, if we just take the time to stop and notice. It is not big, bright, flashy stars or loud trumpets that proclaim God's presence. It is hidden stars nestled amongst the others in the constellations, and the humble adoration of visiting strangers who find hospitality in the company of the poor. So may we be sensitive enough to notice the little epiphanies all around us, hidden in nature, in the seemingly insignificant actions of our friends, families, neighbors, children, and strangers. May we see God in the places that we least expect and be reminded that the kingdom that Jesus came to create is a kingdom of love and justice, not just for us, but for all people. Amen.